Thank you, New York. Today, we're reminded of the power of community and the power of coming together. Athletes, on your mark.
The first woman to finish for the second straight year here in the New York City Marathon is Mickey Gorman, a smiling Mickey Gorman, and why not? 2:29:30, the time for Greta Vikes.
Look at the emotion of Shalane Flanagan as she comes to the line,
pointing to his chest, pointing to the USA. He so proudly wears across his chest. A great day for Mev Kozlowski.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Set the Pace, the official podcast of New York Roadrunners. I'm New York Roadrunner CEO Rob Similcare, just back from an incredible weekend in Boston. Meb Kozlowski, who had a great day in Boston himself, he'll be joining us a little bit later on in the podcast. But what a great weekend it was. Beautiful weather, especially for the spectators and the runners who started early. Got a little warm later in the day, but it was a beautiful day and a great weekend in Boston. It was also a great weekend for Set the Pace. We had a great live show. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, go back and take a listen as we were live with Des Linden and Matt Wilpers at the Citizens House of Blues right across from Fenway Park. So it was just a great, great time for everybody in Boston. For all of our listeners out there, if you had a day, any day out there, if you ran the race, we hope it was a great one. Congratulations to all of the finishers. And while 26,000 runners were making their way to the finish line in Boston, here in New York, we had more than 800 of our rising New York Roadrunners runners at Icon Stadium out on Randall's Island participating in the Spring Jamboree presented by TCS. Kids from the ages of 2 to 18, they threw shot puts, they practiced their long jumps, they raced dashes and relays, and just spent the day laughing and having a great time. Beautiful weather that day out on Randall's Island. These youth events are a big part of the work we do here at New York Roadrunners. And so appropriately, today's member moment will feature Michelle Perez. She's a member of Team for Kids. And it's a great day to have Michelle on the show because this past Monday, she earned her Abbott World Marathon Major 6-star along with over 1,000 other runners at the Boston Marathon. Congrats to everybody who got their 6-star this past weekend. Speaking of the Abbott World Marathon Majors, we are now deep into spring major season. Tokyo, of course, was 6 weeks ago. We've just gotten past Boston and London, of course, coming up this Sunday. And so with that in mind, we got great guests on tap today. The hosts of the official podcast of Abbott World Marathon Majors, Marathon Talk, Dina Castor and Martin Yelling, join us on the show. Dina Castor, of course, she is a true household name in the world of marathons. A 3-time Olympian, bronze medalist at the 2004 Athens Olympics, and she held 10 American records, represented the United States in 16 world championships during her career. Many of you also probably know Martin from the podcast Marathon Talk, which is in its 12th year, and it's had over 12 million downloads. Martin is a former English international runner, a British national elite duathlon champion, and a triathlete. Since September of 22, Martin and Dina have joined forces as co-hosts of Marathon Talk, and so we are thrilled to have Dina and Martin on Set the Pace. Dina and Martin, it is so great to have you on Set the Pace. I've been a fan of your podcast with Abbott World Marathon Majors, and so it's great to have you on ours. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us. It's a pleasure to be with you, Rob. It's fun to see you at the majors and also see you at the comforts of my home as well.
Yeah, really lovely to meet you, Rob.
You too, Martin. We've got to get together in person sometime. I've seen your name and heard your voice so many times. So let's talk about Boston for a second. I was lucky enough to be there for most of the weekend. I know you are both watching remotely. Dina, you're out in California. Martin, you're getting ready for London over in the UK. Mm-hmm. What were your impressions? Dina, I'll start with you of the day in Boston and the winners.
You know, it's always electric race weekend. The buildup and the hype, anticipation is always so exciting as it was just completely bombarding my social media feed, everything Boston to the races themselves, how they played out so differently. The domination on both the men's and women's wheelchair racing and on the men's professional side and then the women's side, so different, just a pack of 20 women through the halfway. And it was really just a tactical race that Helen O'Beery ran away with in the final stages. But brilliant racing all around. It never disappoints. Always an exciting day.
Yeah, we've seen Dina, you know, Helen and Sharon kind of do this before, right? They hang out with a group, and then when they decide it's on, then it's on. And all of a sudden it becomes a two-woman race. Did you see that coming, Dina, as you watched the race play out?
I did, only because they were sitting behind and letting American Emma Bates do so much of the leading and so much of the work. And I would imagine, I was actually thinking of you, Rob, because like, I'm sure your heart is like, New York Marathon winners, like those are kind of like your champions, like you're rooting for them to continue their story of success. But that was a hard one, right? I mean, you had Sharon Lochetti and Helen O'Beery to cheer for. It was just an exciting day. But Helen just really times those races beautifully. And she's such a master of the craft, both on the track and at the marathon distance. She's got a bright future, and she's already done so much.
And Martin, on the men's side, it was just something to see Cissé Lemma just run away with it. We had a similar thing in New York, obviously, a runaway winner with Tola. And this was another runner who just was on his game, Martin, and left everybody behind. Did you see that coming, or did that shock you as you watched it play out?
Well, I don't think anything in you know, global marathon running is shocking at the moment. You know, we're seeing some absolutely groundbreaking, brilliant runs. I think the major thing that stood out for me was definitely that halfway split. You know, I mean, who goes through in 60:19? Who goes through in 60:19 at Boston? You know, and of course, like, that's ambitious, right? And then what made the race so exciting was seeing the clawback. You know, we saw in the women's race the importance of patient racing. And in the men's race, we saw this clawback where the race wasn't quite long enough for Mohamed Issa to reel in Cissé Lemma, who had like over 2 minutes in the tank, in the bank at 35K. And then, you know, that lead was shut down to just about 40 seconds at the finish. So, you know, had the Boston course been just a teeny bit longer, I wonder if we'd have seen a different winner. Rob, I can't, you know, carry on with the conversation. You asked what are our highlights, and I'm going to fly the Brit flag a little bit because, you know, in Eden Rainbow Cooper, we saw her win her first ever Abbott World Marathon Major race, became the first British woman to win the women's wheelchair race in Boston, and also the first British winner since Jeff Smith of any elite event in Boston. And Jeff won way back in 1985. So it was great to see Eden taking that victory.
I'm gonna piggyback off of that, because the wheelchair racing has just been so exciting every marathon major that we are able to witness. And Eden Rainbow Cooper just running brilliantly, even shocking herself, which was so great to see her surprise at the finish line. And then on the men's side, we're used to Marcel Hoog, like seeing him out in front with no challengers in the last couple of years. But to see him crash early on in the race and still upright, like he crashed into the sponsor fencing on the side of the course, and to see him right himself and then just continue his mission to break his own course record, I just think is a testament to the resiliency that these athletes have to nurture day in and day out. We learn so much by observing these races, and I feel like I'm a podcaster, Rob, so I have to throw it back on you. You were there and you were in it. So what was it like? What was race day like? Because from the other side of the television, it looked absolutely electric for the entire coverage.
It's always so funny when a podcaster tries to interview a podcaster. It's like, I'm going to ask you a question. No, I'm going to ask you a question. Let's go back and forth. So all good. You know, Dina, it was a beautiful day to spectate the Boston Marathon. It was a great day to run, especially in the early waves. As the day got later, it really started to warm up, and you know, some of the everyday runners in the later waves struggled, and we saw some of that. But It was a gorgeous day. The atmosphere around the finish line where I was all day was just electric. It really was. And they do a great, great job, BAA, in setting up an opportunity for people to follow the television broadcast while you're there at the finish line. You can really see how the race is playing out while you're sitting there waiting for the winners to arrive. And there was a lot of excitement around the Americans, and especially on the women's side, how well they performed. Des Linden right there with the leaders for such a long time, 6 years after her win in 2018. You mentioned Emma Bates there in front late. So people were excited to see that. Obviously, when it got late, the Kenyans and the Ethiopians did take over. But I think there was just a ton of excitement. What was your take, Dina, on the American performance in Boston?
Yeah, it was exciting because they were up there for so long. Emma Bates leading much of it, and then Sarah Hall on her birthday having a great run at Boston, taking advantage. She's actually not a great warm weather runner. So when I saw her dumping water on her head through halfway, I'm like, oh yeah, it's probably heating up. So it was, I could kind of tell what it was going to be like for the masses later in the day. But seeing Sarah dump water on her head let me know that she probably wished the weather was slightly cooler. And then when Des Linden, she just is a master of that course, just like a metronome. To you could just see her in the back of the screen lingering, and she would ebb and flow with the pack a little bit. But when she finally caught the back of the pack, I cannot remember what mile mark it was, but she caught the back of the pack and then even led the race. I mean, I felt like people were cheering in their living rooms and cheering at the finish line to be able to see her take over like that. So it made me think that there was maybe some pace shifts within that time period, but always exciting to see Americans run well in Boston. And I just think it bodes well for the state of our sport right now to see that they can mix it up in the World Marathon Majors, but also at the Olympic Games. And we are in an Olympic year. So I'm super excited to see what the Americans can do, the ones that are wearing the red, white, and blue uniform heading over to Paris this summer.
Well, speaking of crossing the pond, Martin, so many people in the industry, runners, people who work in this great sport of running are making that journey right now across the pond from Boston over to London, where you are. And what's the vibe coming into London this weekend?
Well, best race in the world, isn't it, Rob? Best race in the world.
Not Rob doesn't think so.
I'll let that go.
Rob has a favorite.
Hugh Brasher and I have a back and forth on that. So I'll let you have it because it's your week, Martin. So it's the best race in the world this coming weekend. Yeah, no question about it.
Best race. TCS London Marathon. Best race in the world this coming weekend, of course. Sunday, April 21st. And yeah, it's going to be a really great year. You're right. You know, no Kelvin Kiptum. And I think obviously that, you know, a terrible tragedy. But the races this year are still loaded, actually, and the fields are still super strong. And I think mostly I'm excited about the women's race. You know, Dina and I have spoken a lot this year about the power of global women's marathoning and just the trajectory that it's on, you know, and the unbelievable performances that we keep seeing. And this year in London, you know, we have an amazing field. Tigist Asifer, Bridget Kosgei, Ruth Chepngetich, Paris Chepchirchir, Sheila Chepkirui. And I think that the women's world best 2:17.01 set in London by Mary Kiptaney could go. You know, I think there's a really good chance that's going to go. So I think that's what I'm most excited about, although I'm not certain how. So I was thinking a little bit about what that approach to take that record would be, given that, you know, given that we know the world record of 2:11 was set by Asifa. You know, what's she going to do? You know, what's she going to do to run? When you run 2:11.53 just last year, and you're trying to beat 2:17, and what's your approach going to be? Is it going to be to, you know, smash it out the park and proper go for it? Or is it going to be, you know, a patient, again, kind of like we saw in Boston, a patient, slow burn, faster time. I don't know. So I think I'm excited about the women's race.
Yeah, Dina, that's the question with these women's races, is the mentality that is brought to it. And, you know, does someone decide to just step on it and go early? Or is it that tactical race of the kind that we saw in Boston or that we saw in New York this past fall as well?
Right. I think, to use Martin's verb, I think there's going to be a proper smashing. I think when you have the likes of Tigis DeCefa and Ruth Chepngetich, who have shown every time they get out there to race, they race aggressively. That's how the race is going to unfold. I have been obsessively refreshing my weather app, and the conditions look so great for good racing. I know these races are hard to predict because just in Boston, we saw the men's and women's pro races go out so totally differently despite running in the same conditions. So I do feel like not everyone is going to go out and try, but if you take Tigis DeCefa and Ruth Chepngetich, who have two of the top five fastest times in history, I think we're going to see some brilliant racing. I think we're going to see Mary Kitani's 2 hour, 17 minute women's only world record go down. That's from 2017. I think that I would be surprised if it didn't. If I'm going to be surprised at any performance, I'd be surprised if that record didn't go. But I also think we are looking at territory of women running 210 and under. That is insane to me. It is absolutely insane. I come from the era of Paula Radcliffe. I come from the era of breaking 2 hours and 20 minutes was rare territory. And so to see that we are in the time of depth of talent, which is what it takes, having that depth of talent, I think we can certainly see women running 210 or under. Did I just say that?
And joining us mid-interview, it's Meb Keflezighi, fresh off of his first race in Boston in quite a bit. And a great day it was for you, Meb, yesterday. We'll get to that in a little while, but it's good to see you, Dina and Martin. Meb is with us. So Meb, we're just talking London a little bit, and the men's side is also impressive. There are six men in this field who have run sub 204. Of course, the champion we had last fall, Tamara Tola, will be there. What are your thoughts, Martin, on the men's side?
Well, it's going to be really exciting racing, particularly with Kenenisa Bekele in the field. You know, I find Kenenisa Bekele an extraordinary runner, one who, you know, we never quite know how he's going to turn up. Of course, amazing career on the track, winning three Olympic, you know, five World Championship gold medals, 11 golds at the World Athletics Cross Country Championships, one of the greatest runners of all time, and with a 201.41 marathon in Berlin in 2019. But I kind of never know what he's going to bring. So I'm excited about seeing what, you know, what he's going to do. Disappointingly, I was hoping Jeffrey Kamworo was going to be on the start line, but unfortunately he has withdrawn. I'm also really excited. Yeah, I'm really excited to see how the British guys get on. Callum Hawkins hasn't raced for a while. Emil Keres is in great, great form. He made his debut last year. He ran 208.07, but I hear he's in super slick form. So yeah, I'm excited both at the very sharpest end of the field, but also, you know, the domestic end.
Because we're on Set the Pace, I'm going to be cheering for Tamara Tola, our defending New York City Marathon champion. But Kenenisa Bekele, we can't underestimate him. Although he's unpredictable when he shows up on the starting line, you have to give respect to the third fastest man in history of this event.
Well said, Dina. You know, Tamara Tola, the defending champion of the TCS New York City Marathon. The only hesitation for me for Kenenisa Bekele, as you know, as we get older, he was in his prime in the 10K. He was in his prime in the cross country. He was untouchable, but the experience will pay big time for him if he is there in the last 5K or so. They're going to try to get rid of him before that. But I think the London Marathon is going to be very exciting, close finish, hopefully.
Meb, you're still in your prime because your smile when you crossed the finish line in Boston was the same smile I saw when you won the race. So you're still in your prime, buddy. So maybe Ken Anisa Bekele still has it in him to do great things and smile across that finish line like you do.
Oh, that's very sweet of you, Dina. It's a smile and a finish line is, you know, how beautiful that is. Yes, I had a great smile yesterday, especially in the early stage of the miles, giving high fives. And eventually when I was not going to break 3 hours, it converted to high fives. And what joyful it was to celebrate the 10 years at the Boston Marathon. Thanks, everybody, for making it very special. But yes, so experience going to be big for Ken Anisa Bekele. I think I just... how they strategize, what are they going to do at the beginning? And then are they going to go fast for world record? You know, depends on the weather. Those are the factors that we have to consider. But I think it's going to be an exciting regardless.
All right. Well, it was certainly an exciting day in Boston, not just for the folks who finished in the top 10, but for everybody. An incredible day for everyone running yesterday. You know, I read the news this morning, Dina, about the finishing time. And, you know, the average finishing time in Boston was getting up around 4 hours for all runners. This is a trend that we're seeing in the sport now. Faster times in the lead among the elite athletes, but for the general field, the finishing times are getting higher and higher. And I had so many friends and we had New York Roadrunners members out there running yesterday, thrilled to be there, but, you know, finishing north of 4 hours and sometimes north of 5 hours. So, what does that say to you, Dina, about the sport of marathoning right now? Is it a good thing? Is it something that you think we should think about differently? How do you think about it?
When I see the average time getting slower over the years, I just think, good, the sport is touching more people, right? It's touching people who didn't believe they could do it before seeing someone. Maybe it was something they saw, some similarity they saw in someone crossing that finish line, whether it was on TV or on their social media feed, and it gave them like that little spark of belief that they might be able to do it. And so they found a community or got out there by themselves and they put in the miles and followed a program and they showed that they could do it. And so I see that as touching a broader demographic. And so I'm really proud when I see that.
You know, Dina, I can relate on that. Been on the course yesterday, you know, in the middle of the pack. You know, you have crowds, you have family members who finishing at 26.2 miles is so hard and so difficult. And when you're having those people participate in those marathon, and especially like the Boston Marathon, the Everyday Athletes Olympics, it's pretty special. But what does that mean to, how do you think they affect people? Say, if he or she can do it, invite that, inspire. Just as you have inspired the elite athlete for you, the trailblazer of the many accomplishments from the 5K to the 8K, 10K, half marathon, full marathon, how do you see that inspiring others to just be participant in any marathons?
Yeah, Rob, I'm going to chip in as well, if you don't mind, because, you know, for me, actually, I feel like that is a real positive move for marathoning. In fact, in London, that time is slower. You know, in year on year, we see that time getting slower and slower. In fact, I think the average finish time in London is about 4 hours and 47 minutes. You know, and London have also brought in things like tail walkers at the back end of the field. And that really is to, you know, encourage a richness. You know, gone are the days, I think, where marathons hold an appeal for just a particular type of person in really small shorts. You know, actually now... Like really looking when you look at a marathon from the outside, you should see it representing your local community. You know, and that's the case whether you're looking at the boroughs in New York City or whether you're looking at running through the streets of London. You should see your communities represented. And races like, you know, TCS London Marathon and across the Abbott World Marathon Major Series, I know they're really focusing on ways to include all runners, you know, and so it seems logical, therefore, that times should slow down a little bit, you know. And I love the way that races are adapting to allow that to happen. You know, races are adapting to enable more different and new people to run. And that's only a great thing for our sport.
Martin, I'm going to ask you a question before, because then we're going to lose you in a couple of minutes. And I want to ask you about your podcast, Marathon Talk. It's a great, great conversation that you and Dina have every couple of weeks. It's become a real staple of the Abbott World Marathon Majors family. And what has it been like for you to see this podcast evolve? I know you've been doing it for quite a while. Dina has joined you. How has it affected your relationship to this sport of running and marathons?
Well, it's great. I mean, Dina is a fantastic co-host. Actually, you know, I'll be honest with you guys. You know, I was a little bit nervous. And, you know, I keep putting my foot in it a little bit where I say something to Dina and then then she'll whisper, yeah, you know, I did medal in that race one time. And I feel like, oh yeah, I should have known that. But also at the same time, you know, what Dina brings to the show is this fantastic expertise of global marathon running. I'm enjoying learning more and us being able to build, you know, a relationship as hosts to draw out fascinating things about the running community. I've been doing podcasting a long time now. I set up Marathon Talk about, 12, 13 years ago. And you know, it's been about 13 million downloads across those years now. I set it up originally with Tom Williams, who's actively involved with the parkrun movement. And so I think what's it given me is, it's given me a constant way to talk about and express an energy and an enthusiasm and a love for, you know, a love for sport that has given all of us, you know, so much. And I think if other people can drop in and take little bits of that information, whether that's from interviews or talk or, you know, hopefully participation in the great global events that you know, you will stage, then we can only be doing a good thing. We can only be doing a good thing.
All right, it's that kind of week in the sport of running. We got people coming and going. Martin had to go as he's getting ready for London. Meb joined us mid-podcast, so we're all busy. But Dina, we've got you here still. And I just want to ask you about the partnership with Martin. When you joined this podcast, Marathon Talk, the official podcast of Abbott World Marathon Majors, how did that all come about?
Yeah, you know, Martin and Tom had finished their 600th episode and wrapped up Marathon Talk that they started. And I was a fan of that podcast. I thought they had such great stories to share. What I learned from Martin is really being a good listener. He has so much sage advice and he has so much wisdom, but with all of that, he is great at asking questions because he is immersed in someone's story. He's empathetic and sensitive and compassionate and really wants to allow someone to tell their story in a rich, meaningful way. And so I learned that from him. It was Abbott who came to me and Martin after I had gotten my 6-star in Berlin. It took me many years to get it with New York in 2001 and finally just a few years ago getting my 6-star in Berlin. But a wonderful journey, and there are so many great stories out there. When they came to me and asked if we wanted to refresh and take this podcast over again, it was a no-brainer to me. It scared me to death, so I knew it was the right thing to say yes to. And to me, I really just enjoy working with Martin because of such a richness in his listening abilities, and he has taught me so much in a short amount of time, and it's been a privilege to work with him. I feel like we talk for an hour before we even push record, and every time I'm like, we should have just been recording the whole thing because what you say is so rich and beautiful. But he's got such great advice, and he's so introspective. I just really enjoy working with him.
Hey, Dina, such a great time to have you on the podcast, as you have your own podcast. I'm pretty sure Martin is very fortunate to have that experience that you bring to the table. You are an icon. But running for you, let's go back. Living with you, training with you, and been in so many teams with you. You have a funny way of telling how your running started. Can you tell us about that?
Oh boy, it's because you like me to talk about my failures. Is that why?
No. It's just it's just how amazing it is to be able to just share the stories we all have upbringing. And just I get a lot of kick out of that because my daughters were doing similar thing, and I'm, you know, but I have to convince them.
I'm not as good at football or soccer as you were in your youth, Meb. But the reason that I started running was because of falling short in a lot of other sports, and soccer was one of them. I was in the first game of the season. I scored a goal. It was my only goal of the season. It's because I didn't realize we switched sides, switched directions at halftime, and I actually scored a goal for the other team. And then in softball, we got out of that sport quickly. In softball, my dad was the coach and put me in the outfield where the ball rarely came. And I was out there making dandelion necklaces for me and my teammates when people were like shouting my name. And I looked down and saw the ball was at my feet. And I thought, oh, I think I'm supposed to throw it to first base. But the girl had already scored a run. So it was just anything with coordination and focus was not for me. And my parents were really worried about my self-esteem. It was like a buzzword back in the 90s. And so let's let her join the track team and work on her self-esteem. Everybody gets a ribbon at the end of the races. And Marion Jones was in a multi-time gold medalist, was in the rival track club. So on behalf of my self-esteem, I became a distance runner right away. And getting let loose in the Santa Monica Mountains that first day was like heaven on earth to me. I did not want to turn around. It was a love affair with the mountains and the scenery. And to this day, despite so many competitive seasons, my joy for running comes out when I'm on a trail and surrounded by wildlife and forest. It really just fills my spiritual cup immediately.
Dina, your story is such an interesting one. It's unique among a lot of elite marathoners. You were adopted as a baby, basically at birth. You raised in a Jewish family as well. Something we don't see every day among the elite athletes in this sport. What has running done for you? And what has it meant for you to represent, you know, people with similar stories to yours, you know, people who, you know, there's so many adoption stories out there, and you see all different kinds. You know, is it something that has helped you relate to others? And have you had people with your story, you know, reach out and say, hey, you know, to see someone like you doing what you're doing really has inspired me?
Yeah, you know, I think when we look at the running community as a whole, it is so important to find those similarities in one another. That's how the sport grows. That's how, if we're going to look back on our conversation already, it's how we get greater participation, because people are seeing similarities in those. You have to see it to become it. And so if you could see someone like you in any small way, it could be their history, their ethnicity, their religion, their gender, whatever it is, you look at those similarities so that you could find it within yourself to continue growing. And so I think it's so important to continue connections. I think that's why we podcast, right? We just like getting those stories, those really deep stories out. And thank goodness people used their challenge and their voice and their ability. Thank goodness they chose this sport to express it, because it is so rich and we can continue to do better. But my gosh, we have participation in this sport that rivals no other. And we're still trying to find ways to allow it to grow and reach more people, because we know the benefits of it. We see how enriched our lives can become, how empowered we can be when we set the pace and put one foot in front of the other. So it's so beautiful to be a part of this sport and to be able to share those really just powerful stories so that someone might be able to resonate with some portion of that to get the best out of themselves.
Dina, you had such a great success in all levels, and your book Let Your Mind Wander. What would be, if anything, obstacles that you challenged that was kind of a little bit harder for you at the time?
Yeah, you know, I think our challenges are big no matter what direction they come from. And mine was doubt, and my mind was a really big struggle for me. And I struggled with the word talent, because as at a young age, Meb, you went through it too, that you're told you're talented and you've got this talent. Well, luckily you came from an upbringing where you put that talent to work right away. I didn't really know how to do that, even though I had great mentors. I didn't realize that I just thought talent was something you relied on. I didn't realize you had to put work into it and feed that talent in order for it to express itself. And so I didn't learn that until after college, which is so crazy to have run for more than a decade and not really understand the sport at all. And it was such a beautiful growing process immediately when you started putting work into it, when you started applying yourself and seeing how fast those rewards come back to you. So I think it really comes with that growth really comes from being open and paying attention to your surroundings. Meb, I learned so much from you as a leader in the sport and your work ethic. I learned from Martin podcasting with him, his empathy and sensitivity and compassion, despite his hard coaching background, that he's really sensitive to listening to those stories and letting them giving people permission to unpack them so that we can learn from others. So you just keep learning about leadership, and Rob, your eloquence when you are standing up there. I know I still feel like you're new in this role, but you just have such a commanding way when you are standing up there in a room and the room quiets when you get to that microphone. And it's learning like constantly when you're around people, like what makes these people in the room shine and how could I do that?
You know, Dina, you are a shine to the world. You have shined your talents all the way from the American record to world record. What is for you meant to you for when you introduce President Bill Clinton in San Diego? Some people might not know that, but, you know, become from Arkansas, going to the University of Arkansas. What was that moment for you? And then also, before I forget, tell us about why you chose to do your first marathon in New York.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's a lot that comes to mind. So we were living at the Olympic Training Center, you and I, in Chula Vista, California, at the time that President Bill Clinton was coming in to celebrate the anniversary of Title IX. What an honor. I think the connection was just that I went to the University of Arkansas. So go Hogs.
And your accomplishments.
So it was such a privilege to be able to introduce him. You've actually been to the White House on a post-Olympic team trip. My world record is from your race, the Carlsbad 5000. My world record from there was a race that Meb is co-owner of. And I just think when we get these opportunities that the sport gives us to share our voice, like let's make sure we're shedding a good light on it for everybody. And it is it's a privilege, it's a responsibility, and it's so important to represent the sport and the people in our community in the best way that we can. And thank goodness we have these platforms to do it. It did take a lot of hard work to get there, but I feel that privilege every day.
Okay, now I do want to hear this story, since Meb mentioned it, of your first New York City marathon. What happened? What led you to run it?
Yeah, you know, I was just dabbling in the marathon to give myself strength for the 10,000 meters. That's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to dip a toe in there, right? And get stronger, be more enduring. And it was so hard. It was so challenging. That I thought this is where I'm meant to grow. This is where I'm meant to build myself. It was a struggle, but it was also interesting that I never believed that I could run 26.2 miles until one day I ran 18 miles and thought, which was a few miles longer than my previous longest distance. And I thought, I might be able to do that marathon someday. And I was signed up within months. Thanks to your elite athlete coordinator at the time, David Monty, and then Sam Grotewald. I just feel like it took a village, but I realized that it was, I feel like on the track, you're always competing, like performing for people. It feels like a performance. And in the marathon, it felt like a community. Like I was on that bridge with, at the time, 30,000 other people. And I felt like they were all my people.
You know, can you, for those of them who don't know, when was that? And I know there was an incident, 9/11. How was your mind frame going to that, to do something really positive for the city of New York?
Yeah, 2001. So we had made our first Olympic team, Meb, in 2000, the year prior. And I got absolutely demolished in the 10,000 meters. And then I thought, how can I get stronger from here? So New York City was my avenue to build that strength. And September 11th happened. Meb and I were here training in Mammoth Lakes, California, and it was just this gloomy day, even though we were on the opposite side of the country, this gloomy day, and wondered whether the race would even go on at all. To see the resiliency in such a short time frame of New York coming together to host people from around the world was miraculous. I think a big tagline that year was "United we stand, united we run." There were signs that I saw throughout the course, but that gap in the New York City skyline was seen right at that starting line on the Verrazano-Narrows Bridge. You could see it still smoking. So it was surreal, but it felt like running for a higher purpose that day. It wasn't about me and that journey. It was about New York City.
Well, you did represent the United States. It was the U.S. Championship at the same time. You unified the world. You know, Dina, marathon, you want to do it for the first time and maybe went down to bring you, help you be the best 10K runner. But I would be remiss to say, you inspired me, my first marathon. I remember we did a tempo run in Grichenge Road. I said, 15 mile. How am I supposed to go? And yes, catch me if you can. You always played around with me to be able to chase you down. But then I realized after I did 15-mile tempo, I'm like, how am I supposed to go another 11 miles? So you've been a big sister. But tell us about you, the moment when in Athens, Greece, where you know, to see that medal come in front of you, to be able to just win a bronze medal for our country, which you thought, you know, okay, I'm going to do this build up for a 10K, but here you are now, dreams of all athletes coming through. Can you walk us through the last mile or 600 meter?
You're bringing out all my ugly crying moments, Meb.
joyful moments. But
yeah, I wear my heart on my sleeve, which is a testament to loving this sport so much. We had an amazing summer training. It seemed like we just kept like asking our bodies to put in more miles and harder miles, and our bodies kept delivering. It was pretty amazing to be in this cycle of just really flawless running and growth. It was like big time physical and mental growth in that whole summer, as we were not just putting in those miles, but specific to heat training and even making our work, moving our workouts up to higher elevation. We were doing those 2 mile repeats at 9,000 feet. That was a hurt I had never experienced before that. And so to go into Athens with that belief that we had done it all right was a big part of it. And I think that for a marathoner, that's the hardest thing, is to just believe and trust in that training. And that was a big lesson from the Athens preparation, was just trust, right? Like all the work is in and you trust that it's going to be what you need to get on the podium, which is what we were both after. And the heat that day, 101 degrees. I remember our friend Abdurrahman carrying the ice chest that had the U.S. team ice vests in it. And he said, man, they're going to call this off. It is way too hot out here. And he had sweat like dripping off his nose. And I thought, oh God, I don't want to hear that right now. 101 degrees when we got dropped off in the town of Marathon. And I just thought, you know, to beat the heat, I need to be the last person to overheat out here. And so I was really just trying to be conservative in the beginning stages, which is what weather does for us. When we are obsessively refreshing our weather apps right before the race, it's so that we can just prepare better, right? So if it's cold, bring your layers out that you could throw on the side of the course and they get donated. You're not littering. If it's hot, make sure your race tactics are a little more conservative and wear cool clothing, loose fitting clothing, and really make sure you're getting all your fluids in. And so as that momentum of the race was moving on, clipping off one runner at a time. Finally, it was Elfnesh Ilemu from Ethiopia ahead of me. And I just like sucked in my breath and went by her as good as I could look. So she didn't think she could stand a chance. And coming into that Olympic stadium, knowing that I've earned a medal for my country, was a dream come true. But as that flag was being raised in that stadium, the American flag for my bronze medal, I immediately thought I could do better than this. And that's the spirit of racing, right? Like we could run those PRs, but we sign up for that next race because we know that we have more in us. And I think that that's the beauty of this sport that keeps us in it for a really long time.
Tina, what's great talking to you is how it seems like these moments you've had, they seem just yesterday. And listening to you talk about them, you're still so kind of emotionally in touch with these things that have happened to you, which makes you a great podcaster, right? Because you really are able to access these stories and speak with the emotion of someone who has almost just done it. What has the podcasting thing done for you in helping you stay in touch with this sport?
Yeah, that's a great question because when I get a chance a couple times a month to speak to people that have these amazing stories and consider this sport their lifeline, it re-inspires me every single day. Like I have notes and notes, like every time I'm talking to someone, I'm writing down notes and then I'm thinking about it as I go for my next run. Like I'm mulling it over. Like I want to be kind of like the quilt of all the greatness I'm able to come across, right? You want to not just give people this platform to tell their stories. You want to take on their stories and let it be a part of who you are. So if not, we're not getting the great lessons, right, that we're sharing with others. So I love that I not just get to allow people to have their voice and share their great stories and inspire the listeners, but I am inspired every time I hear these stories. And I think that's such a great privilege that we have to, it's why Meb's retired and he's still running marathons. What are you doing? That's not retirement. You're still limping around the next day. Retirement is like your toes in the sand and a drink in your hand. But this sport just brings that out in us. It's like, there's always, we may not be as fast as we once were, but I would assume that Meb would agree that we are our best selves right here and right now because of those stories we get to hear.
Well, Dina, if folks didn't know why you are one of the most beloved figures in this sport of running, not just here in the United States, but beyond, they know now from listening to this conversation because you're just such a pleasure to talk to, such an amazing ambassador for the sport. Thank you so much for spending a little time with us. We got to have you back and do this again. This was so much fun. Or maybe I'll come visit you and Martin over on Marathon Talk, your great podcast as well. Meb and I will maybe pay you a visit there. But thank you so much for being with us and have a great time in London.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you so much, Meb. And Martin and I have already been talking off channel about coming and running in New York City. So we hope to see you at the races this year.
All right, we'll do this in person next time in New York. I love it. All right, now it's time for our member moment. And this week, we are so excited to celebrate a Team for Kids star who just earned her sixth star in the Abbott World Marathon Majors by finishing the Boston Marathon. Please welcome to the show, Team for Kids fundraiser, Michelle Perez. Michelle, welcome and congratulations on your sixth star. How's it feel?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's amazing. My entire Boston Marathon weekend and experience was the best thing I could have ever experienced before.
Amazing. Tell me what it meant for you to get to Boston for this. I don't know what your order of races was to get the six-star. Boston's a hard one. I know you ran it with us, a Team for Kids, which we love and appreciate your support. But when did you know that you were going to get a chance to complete the six-star journey in Boston?
So I ran Tokyo last year, which was really different and hard post-COVID. Once I ran Tokyo and I completed it, I said, you know what? I have to go for Boston.
Well, you did Boston. Let's see those fingers that you have. Your nails are amazing to do inspiration for festivity. Wow.
You can't see, but she's got these beautiful fingernails that are painted. Are those unicorns on the fingernails? Like, they look just like those Boston colors. Yeah,
it's
amazing.
It's a Boston unicorn.
That's pretty cool. We got to get a picture of that for social. It's great, Michelle. You really, you celebrated the right way with those nails.
You know, you have done 53 races for the New York Road Runners since 2014. When did you begin your running journey? And did you ever imagine completing the six stars at the beginning when you start running, maybe how far it was? Can you tell us that journey and to be able to just finish your six star on Monday?
To be honest, I started running because I delivered my daughter. And after delivering her, I did suffer from postpartum depression and I didn't know how to deal with it. A lot of my friends had already had children that were teenagers. No one had small babies like me. And a girlfriend of mine said, you know, you need to get out. You need to be active. You need to be with other people. I had always ran in the gym. She said, why don't you try running outside? Look for social groups. And I searched on Facebook and I found New York Road Runners. And I immediately just started registering for races. And it was the best thing I could have done. I started meeting people. I started interacting with them, registering for more races. As far as the six stars is concerned, I did not have a plan. It just happened to be that I kept checking off all of these majors.
How important is to be in a group? Because I see that you also have your kids participate in the New York Road Runners kids program.
Right. My children, Liliana, who's 11, and Madison, who is 7, started running as soon as they could walk. So I started registering them when they were about 2 years old. And for me, it's important because I want them to be social. I want them to be with other children. I want them to understand what group settings are like for exercise.
I love it. And Michelle, I love your sharing with us what got you into running, your battle with postpartum depression. We talk a lot on this show about the mental health impacts of running. And, you know, what's your message out there, Michelle, to someone who's maybe going through what you went through with postpartum depression? It's such a common thing. What can you tell them about the impact that running and being physically active had on you as you found your way out of that?
I would say that it's important to talk and to share with people what you're going through. I think sometimes as people, we tend to bottle our feelings in and we're afraid to share that. So I think it's important to talk to other women, other family members and friends and ask them for guidance. And I think the social aspect is important because you're around other people, you're learning from other people, you're getting guidance from other people that have done this already.
And Michelle, you run with a group as well. Speaking of the social side, you're on a team called Global Run Crew. Tell us about that and how important it was for you to be doing this as part of a larger group.
That is my crew, guys. I love them. So my coach is Mike. He is the captain of the team. It's a small group right now. He just created this group about, I want to say, 6 to 8 months ago. So we're a small, tight-knit group. We're very close. We keep in touch daily. There's accountability for long runs, accountability for races. And we want to be there for each other. You know, we want to have that mentorship with the newer runners. We have a handful of newer runners and we talk to them and we guide them. And it's important for us to be there for one another.
Now, Michelle, you started running for therapy per se, but you have completed 12 marathons. Can you, from indoor running to going outdoors, but the smiles that you have brought for others and the camaraderie, can you tell us a little bit about that, how that has changed your life?
Running has changed me as a woman, as a mom, as a friend, as a family member. You know, honestly, my mom used to run at one point. She was dealing with some things and she didn't know how to move forward, how to keep going forward. And she started running. And me seeing my mom run encouraged me, like, hey, if my mom can do it, she's in her 50s, I can do it. So when things got rough, I started going outside. I started running in Central Park. And Central Park is hard. And now that's my favorite place to run. I spent so much time there in Central Park training and getting ready for Boston that's what I tell all my friends now. Go to Central Park, eat those hills, and you're going to reap the benefits down the road.
You know, Central Park is pretty amazing. You know, for me, as somebody who comes from outside and be able to interact, and Central Park is one of my favorite places for New York because it collects people, it embraces people, it'll be able to just share, hey, I can compete against this person, or I can conquer this hill. It just brings the best of the best. And I think that's energy, you know, to see somebody as exercise, it just says, hey, I got to get my miles in, whether you're doing on a bike or just visiting, and very inspirational.
Right. I love Central Park. I used to hate running there, to be honest. I found it very difficult. I didn't want to be there. But I've spent the last several weeks every weekend running there. And it was the best part of my training. I ran up all the hills in Boston on Monday without stopping. And I am so proud of myself. Only runners would understand that. But to me, that I've accomplished something huge just by going up all those hills and not stopping.
Well, you never know who you're going to inspire. You know, you said it had a little difficult time. Life gave you lemon. You made a lemon out of that. So way to make obstacles into something positive. Congratulations on job well done.
Thank you so much.
And Michelle, for those out there who are thinking about running Boston, a lot of our listeners are New York Roadrunners members. Some of them have run the TCS New York City Marathon. Compare for them the experience of running Boston versus running New York. How do you compare them? And you could be honest. I know you're talking to the CEO of the New York race, but give us your honest feedback of how it compares to run Boston.
I do think that New York is harder with all the bridges, especially 59th Street. By the time you get there, you're exhausted. And then you have to climb First Avenue. I do think that New York has the best round of spectators. From the minute you start to the minute you finish, you know, in Central Park, it's just lined up. Boston was pretty amazing, too. I was impressed. But New York is my home, and I think it'll always be my favorite marathon.
Excellent answer. We agree. And listen, Boston did a great job this year. They got a nice day. A little warm, I know, for some of the runners. You finished fairly late in the day. I know the later wave runners were definitely feeling the heat. So you got through that, you got through those hills, and you got through to get all six of those Abbott World Marathon major stars. Congratulations, Michelle. You will always be a six-star finisher.
Thank you so much.
All right. It's time now, as we do every week, to get a minute from Meb. It's our Meb Minute. And Meb, you joined the podcast midway through, so let's spend this minute talking about your day in Boston this week. How was it? How did you feel? What was it like going back and covering that 26.2 miles from Hopkinton to Copley Square?
You know, to be in Boston, Rob, it was a lot of fun. It was a busy, busy week for me. The only thing I didn't have on Monday was nothing, which means 26.2 miles. And that 26.2 miles was a lot of fun. The weather was a little bit warm eventually, but I wanted to break 3 hours. That was my goal to go, and we went about halfway, about 127 on pace, and then 16, 17 miles right before the hills. My calves start tying up, but the camera was on me, so I couldn't stop. So it was a little difficult, and it was very challenging going up the hills, but it was a rough, rough finish for me. But at the same time, 2014, I ran to win. In 2024, I ran to finish, and I wrote some victims that are going through some therapy, hospital stuff, situation going on. So they got me to that finish line, and to represent the Met Foundation meant so much to me. It's off my bucket list now, and we raised up close to about $184,000 for the Met Foundation with all the group that I ran. So it was a fantastic day, great celebration, but the course in itself, it was difficult and challenging. And I think probably one of the most common, I just came back, I was late because I was doing meet and greet at Dick's Sporting, and people were saying, how was it? It was tough. It was hard. It was difficult. Usually love and hate of the marathon definitely lived yesterday. And I'm so proud of myself and others who kind of weathered through it, finished it up and it's strong. So now other we get ready for recovery, you know, been drinking a lot of hydration, liquid, and then also protein, and a little bit of walking. You know, I was in my room till this morning. I didn't do much of walking because it was a tough day for me. But today I walked a little bit, and it definitely seems to be helping. So hydration, eating protein, and a little bit of walking, even if it's slow, get it done.
All right, Meb. Well, you say that you run to win, and you won. You won big time because the Meb Foundation had a tremendous day. You mentioned raising over $180,000 for such a great cause. And I had such a great time over the weekend getting a chance to see you celebrated, a great brunch you had, talking about the MEB Foundation and your story, and then the great time we had with the live podcast with Des Linden as well, watching the two of you go back and forth. It was just so much fun. So we kept you busy, but you had you were the toast of the town in Boston this weekend, and well-deserved given your incredible accomplishments there and how much you mean to the city of Boston.
Thank you, Rob. It was a lot of fun. I'm so delighted to do it.
All right. Well, we've got some other congrats to hand out at Set the Pace as well, because some folks on our team had great days as well. Kyle Vines, a name we haven't talked about in this podcast, one of the folks who's on our team, a tremendous day, ran 2:48.03 at Boston. A tremendous day for Kyle of New York Roadrunners. So congratulations to Kyle. Also, Desiree Linden, we talked about Des. She had a great day. She was right there with the lead pack for quite a while, Meb. Finishes at 2:28.27. So a great day for Desi. And another former Set the Pace guest, Jenny Simpson. She had a bounce back from her disappointing day at the Olympic trials. Finished a solid, solid number at a 5:48 minute per mile pace, a total of 2:31.39 for Jenny Simpson. So that's got to give her some confidence in the marathon distance as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to be able to say, hear those results. Kyle, well done. And Jenny Simpson and Desi, wonderful opportunity to be on the same pit road as you guys. I was a little behind you this time, but it was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, Meb, we will definitely see you down the road. That's it for another episode of Set the Pace, a really special one. Thank you to Dina Castor, Martin Yelling, and our member of the week, Michelle Perez, as well. And if you like this episode, please remember, subscribe, rate it. We love seeing you out there. I saw so many people this weekend, Meb, that said, love the podcast. We appreciate that. We really appreciate it if you say that on a comment or a rating on whatever app you listen to. So we'll see y'all next week. Enjoy the miles.